Praising Dharma, principles of religion, Alacha, words, Pachu, of their master, Achetasaha, their minds being disturbed. Sambranta, fearful, palayana para, intent upon fleeing. Nirpa, O King. Translation, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Vrtasura, the commander in chief of the demons, advises and stands in the principles of religion, but the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. O King Pariksit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demonic soldiers, scattering them here and there as if the army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of the soldier, Vrtasura, the best of the Asuras, who was called Indrasatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcefully removed the demigods, speaking the following words, removed. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? Who One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it rob one to the heavenly planets. Wherefore, Richard rebuke both the demigods and the demonic soldiers, because the demons are running in fear of their lives, and again, the demigods are killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. But if a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from a field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down a shot in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Richard Sura insulted the demoniac soldiers by comparing them to the stool of their mothers. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother, and Richard Sura said there's no difference between them. A similar comparison is given by Tulsidas, who condemned that the sun and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son of urine. Similar to Nathapanda also says, Korta putre majate hayona vidmanda dharmika kane na chakshusha kevva chakshusha kidaiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye which simply gives pain, but cannot help one see. Text 5, O insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the core of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for such gratification, please stand before me for a moment. Wherefore, rebuking the demigods with just a real challenge, O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. You do not wish to fight. If you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you, for unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. Sukadeva Goswami said, Richasura, the angry, most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strong adult body when he roared with a resounding voice, and they all living in peace fainted. When all the demigods heard Richasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Richasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield the way a mad elephant tramples all of his in the forest. Seeing Vitrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which was extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew towards him, Vitrasura easily caught it with his left hand. O King Pariksha, the powerful Vitrasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound of battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Struck with a club by Richasura, like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt, the elephant Airavata, feeling great pain, spitting blood from his broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on his back. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way, the great soldier Richasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with his club. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectarian producing hand, and thus relieving the animal's pain and curing the injuries. Thus the elephant Indra rose to his side. O King, when the great hero Richasura sought for his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, designed to fight, Richasura remembered how Indra cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness, laughing sarcastically, and spoke as follows. Sri Richasura said, he who has killed a Brahmin, he who has killed a spiritual master, he who has killed my brother, is now my good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy. When I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a selfless, sinless, qualified Brahmana, who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the promise of a sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body the way one butchers an animal. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruit of activities, you are now condemned, even by the man-eaters. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident. And after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking you with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and other leaders of the ghosts, along with their horns. But if in this battle you cut off my head with a thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take pleasure in offering my body to other living entities such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligation to the reaction of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni. Report Narada Das Dakarasa Hai Gosain Jarmuitar Das Tam Sabar Palaway Mor Panchagras. I am the servant of the six Goswamis and the dust of their feet provide my five kinds of food. A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vrtasura was certain that he would be killed in battle with Indra because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination and is achieved by the grace of the Vaishnava. Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nistar Payak Shikeva. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Manasvigam Padaraja Prapatse. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word Manasvanam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called Dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust, the lotus feet of a Manasvi, a great devotee, is certainly within his own home. So this is this description of the battle. And we also see there's a little bit of an interlude in the battle where Vrtasura speaks different things. The description here is that the soldiers of the Asuras could not stand before the Devatas and began running away. And Vrtasura began to speak to them and tell them that they shouldn't do this because it was not glorious. They should die in battle rather than flee. But they didn't listen to that and they began fleeing. And then the Devatas began to attack them as they fled away. And then Vrtasura chastised the Devatas and says, you shouldn't do this because you shouldn't kill a person from behind. It's very cowardly if a person is not fighting. Of course, he was invoking their Kshatriya spirit. Rules of Kshatriya Dharma by doing so. And then he himself stood up to the Devatas and began attacking Indra and the others, and therefore he speaks to them, telling them that ultimately he actually wishes to die at the hands of Indra. So, the whole idea here is that in spite of the battle that takes place, and in spite of Vrtasura, the demon, revenging the death of his unrightful death of his brother by Indra's hand, Vrtasura was actually a devotee in his previous birth, and he was also conscious of that, so therefore. The impressions of devotion from previous lifetime carry over in this lifetime, and of course will carry over into his next lifetime. So this illustrates the fact that bhakti is not destroyed. Even if by a bad karma or by whatever arrangement of curses or whatever, one falls into a unfortunate body, still that bhakti is not destroyed. So this is one case of that, where a
devotee becomes a demon, but he still is not a real demon. He's a demon body, but he's still a devotee ultimately. And we have other cases also. Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee of the Lord. Then he became a deer, which is a very low body. But that didn't destroy his bhakti. And that bhakti remained intact in that lifetime. And he could also remember his previous life. And then in the next life it manifested again when he became a human. So, and even when he was dying as a deer, he could remember prayers and he began praying to the Lord. So spontaneously bhakti arose even in the deer body by the mercy of the Lord. His impressions from previous lifetime appeared again. And we also have the case of Gajendra. So Gajendra became an elephant by curse. But when he was attacked by the crocodile, then spontaneously began to pray to the Lord also. So that prayer to the Lord was because in previous lifetime he had been a devotee. And the bhakti remained even in the, in the animal body. And of course later he was liberated from that elephant body. So what this means is that the bhakti is not destroyed in spite of the body that one may get. One gets the body usually by sinful activities, or in this case curses or whatever. That does not in any way affect the bhakti. The bhakti remains, and after one's body, that body is finished, then the bhakti continues as previously if one gets a human body. So in this way, bhakti continues and is not destroyed, as is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, which is Nehabhikamana Sosti Pachabaya Navidite. That's the normal condition. Of course, if one commits offense, then bhakti can decrease or even be destroyed. But in normal conditions, because of curses or sinful activities, if one gets a lower body, that does not interfere with the bhakti at all. That is not so for other processes like karma and jnana. By sinful activities, one can destroy either partially or completely whatever progress one has made in the process of jnana or yoga. And then one has nothing left. So without committing aparadas and sinful activities, one can decrease one's position in that particular sadhana. And that is not so for bhakti. And we see that even though Gajendra was an animal and Bharat was an animal, and technically they cannot do bhakti in that body, and therefore they cannot go for devotional association, etc., and do all those things, chant the holy name or hear, etc. Still, bhakti can manifest on its own, as in the case of Bharat, when he was the deer and he was dying, then he offer prayers to the Lord, or spontaneously when Gajendra was attacked by the crocodile, then he began offering prayers. How is it possible? It's possible because, in spite of the fact that they have animal bodies, that bhakti begins to manifest on its own. It is svaprakasha, self-manifesting. It doesn't require anything else. So in spite of the bad karma of having a bad body, still bhakti on its own can manifest. So though those particular bodies were not capable of doing bhakti properly, animal bodies still, bhakti itself manifested, and therefore Gajendra could recite his prayers or Bharat could recite his prayers. So here we have the case of Ritrasura, who was a devotee of the Lord and then became a demon. His only desire is to serve the Lord, but he cannot do so in his demon body. So therefore he prays, let me give up this demon body. And by that, then I can regain my position of serving the Lord. So he prays to him, please kill him. This is an actual prayer. But to do that, then he has to inspire Indra. Because by his fighting, the devatas became fearful. Says here how he describes here how he attacked the elephant that Iravata fell down, and Indra also fell over. So this was very discouraging. So then he has to encourage Indra to fight again, so therefore that's why he's speaking in this manner. So he's encouraging him to take up the fight again, despite of the fact that Vidrasura was in the superior position. This, of course, is also according to the Kshatriya codes, that one should not attack a person when they're in a weak position, whatever. So therefore, he tries to encourage him to fight as an equal. And in that way, then he will be killed, and he will get the blessings of the Supreme Lord and take back his human body, whatever. So the idea here is that bhakti continues in spite of the fact that the body is demoniac. So other processes depend on punya. But here we don't have punya, we have sin involved to get a bad body. But still, the bhakti can manifest. So bhakti is really not dependent upon punya or pap. So when there is no punya and there is pap, still bhakti can manifest. That is the power of bhakti. So karma, of course, naturally depends on punya for progress. In other words, one has to do sattvic activities rather than rajasic or tamasic activities. And that's how it becomes successful. That's how you go to Svargaloka. You're not going to Svargaloka with sinful activities at all. And once your sinful activities are minimized and you're in Gyan and you're in Sattva, then you are qualified to do Gyan. And in Gyan, again, one refrains from sinful activities and becomes completely detached from material objects. So, again, if one starts the sinful activities, one loses one qualification for Gyana. One falls from the position of Gyana. And the same with yoga. So, therefore, the bhakti is very special because in spite of the sinful activities and the bodies one may get, still that bhakti continues and is not destroyed. So that is illustrated here in this story of Vidrasura and his demoniac body. Still, as an elephant, technically, he's not qualified to speak or do anything, is he? But somehow or other, by the power of bhakti, he can utter those prayers. He may have some sentiments, but then due to his painful condition, so that was his impetus, and also to get rid of the pain. But nevertheless, the impetus to offer the prayers and the skill in which he did offer the prayers was only because of the bhakti. Well, in general, the Lord's mission is to support the devas, even though they may do some abominable acts sometime. And the demons, on the other hand, are always opposed to the establishment of dharma, etc. So therefore, the Lord must always oppose them. But even among the demons, we find some qualified persons. So Prahlad is glorified as the best of the demons, because he's not a demon at all. Or we have Bali also, who was born in a demon family, but wasn't a demon. So we do find, and then here Richard Sura, who is also a devotee in a demon body, whatever. So there's always exceptions to the rule. But in general, the Lord has to support the devatas because the demons are opposed to the establishment of dharma.
one is associated with devotion in any case, even when dying or even when he's not dying or whatever, and it's when he's dying and he's not even remembering it, still, whatever devotional activities he's done is to his benefit. So, and it's not the results of that bhakti are not destroyed in his next lifetime. And of course, when he's dying, if he actually remembers the Lord, even that's more auspicious. So there's no problem for the person who is doing bhakti, even if he does not complete the process.